Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm joined by Paul Levy, author, researcher and facilitator. Paul is a senior researcher at the University of Brighton, a facilitator at the Digital and Social Media Leadership Forum, and founder of the arts magazine Fringe Review. Paul, how are you doing this fine Saturday morning?
I'm staring out at sunshine, which is the arrival of spring, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I hope so. It's been a bit cold still recently, but I think Fringe is on the way, or even spring is on the way. Talking of Fringe, tell us a little bit about Fringe Review, because we have the Fringe Festival here in Brighton, don't we? Tell us what the Fringe Review does.
Well, I think that's probably why I started this particular conversation, talking about the weather, which normally might seem like a bit of a boring thing, but actually it means a lot when we're down here in Brighton at the moment as we head into April. It's marketing time in Brighton, as just about 900 events are going to take to the streets, take to social media and try and get bums on seats, people to come. And if it's absolutely pouring with rain, they have to change their strategy and it becomes a lot harder. So the relief of the sun rising is that I run Fringe Review. We go and review theatre. It's an online publication. And we get pitched that in April hundreds and hundreds of times, for us to go and see people's shows.
So how do you get started with this, Paul? Tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I mean, actually, Fringe Review, that part of my life is a bit of a hobby that's got out of control. I've been involved in theatre as a hobby for a while, and then I got a bit more seriously involved in it and got kind of a bit, I think, upset really at the quality of journalism around theatre and how some of my friends and colleagues' shows were being trashed by very lazy writing. So I actually set up a magazine. It's written and the reviewers are all theatre practitioners. And so we're not claiming to be objective, but we make, I think, a really good attempt to try and be objective and to write from experience, not just from whatever mood we happen to be in at the time. And so Fringe Review grew out of literally a one-page website with one review on it to now being a publication online all around the world with about 150,000 readers.
We'll talk about some your book in a minute, but before we go on to that, social media and marketing is a big contentious subject. What's your take on selling and social media marketing, Paul?
Well, stepping back from the social media marketing bit and just looking at selling, some changes have happened probably since the rise of, it's a buzzword I know, but millennials, which are the generation that have grown up since about 84, but a lot of them are the post-banking crisis. And we're even talking about generations after that now. But they have seen the rise and fall of the banks. We've got only in the news today, even our prime minister defending himself against offshore investments. Yeah. We don't trust corporations, public or private. There's a very, very high degree of mistrust. People now default to disbelieving even more than they used to around things like advertising. People assume things are hype, the promises aren't real, and that the word amazing, which is used to describe everything, particularly in the world of theatre.
And awesome.
Yeah, and awesome. And it's just created, there's a couple of phenomena. One is disbelief and cynicism. The second one is tiredness, which leads to a sort of indifference and a turning away from this stuff. Pink Floyd called it comfortably numb. We know it's there. And we know that advertising and marketing still work, but they work in very, very different ways. And they work less when people feel manipulated and pushed against, pushed to. So those models have fallen away and died. And I'd say they're actually, dead in the water, really.
Now, in your latest book, Paul, you talk about sort of concepts such as wilfing, which we'll define, sounds a bit rude, but we'll define that, and digital distraction, something that I'm sure we're all very familiar with. How do you feel that they relate to selling and marketing?
Well, if you just take the concept of wilfing, which stands for what was I looking for, and anybody listening in may well have either consciously or subconsciously been doing this. And it's when, you know, you click on a website or you open your email and you notice that there's an advert on the right, and you do actually click on it out of curiosity because it's been targeted to you and it's actually offering you a very cheap deal on, say, a memory card. And how have they got it? Well, it's because you buy a lot of memory cards and so they've got you, and you click on it. But that actually takes you to a website that's actually offering you some other stuff, that, and you think, oh, it's my mum's birthday coming up, and look, they've got one of those light up umbrellas or whatever, and you click on that. Before you know it, 2 minutes later, you're actually looking at, you know, holidays in Cuba on special offer, and you've gone way away from your original intention, which was to write maybe even a work email. So wilfing is where you start getting distracted. Now, that could be benevolent if the distraction is helpful, but in a lot of cases you go wandering off, and it just adds to the tiredness in a lot of cases, and you come occasionally to a realization that then, oh, I didn't write that email that I was supposed to, and subconsciously you may well blame that wilfing, and again that just chips away at your distrust of people pushing their way into your life, literally into your head. As you lie there in bed, you switched your mobile phone on naughty naughty in bed, maybe just to check on a message, and the first thing that hits you is a pop-up advert, and that is not necessarily what you want to take into your sleep, particularly if it's a pop-up advert for funeral services, because it's targeting you because a relative of yours died and you clicked on a link recently. So wilfing is largely noise for a lot of people, and you know, we engage in it all the time, but I don't think many people I've met enjoy it in the long run. It can be fun to go surfing, it can be fun to just pass a lazy half an hour, but yeah, that distraction in the end becomes a bit toxic in people's lives, as these are hours they simply can't get back.
Do you think it's going to get worse, Paul? Because we hear a lot about beacons, and like you're walking along in the shopping mall and a device in the forecourts of one of the shops sort of detects your mobile phone and pops an ad up on your phone. Do you think it's going to get worse in that way?
Well, the Internet of Things, which is kind of here now, but not really here now, I mean, it's coming very soon, is absolutely going to be the next wave to hit us. And where you go and your behavior is going to be tracked. There's going to be legal issues around all of this stuff, but it kind of is already happening. When you buy stuff in shops, you know, your buying behavior anonymously is collected, and it can be targeted back at you in different ways via websites, for example. Mm. But soon the cameras will be picking up, you know, what you're browsing. That we've already talked in the world of tech about, you know, intelligent clothing rails. You know, there are cameras that are around on screens that are just essentially collecting information that's about marketing back at you. But that's going to get, is it worse or is it going to get better? The term I heard recently at a meeting of the Social Media Leadership Forum, DSMLF, Digital Social Media Leadership Forum, was the Internet of Robots. Yeah. So as security cameras don't just become security cameras, but they just become sensing devices, and they actually are quite intelligent. What they can do is they can notice your behavior in Oxford Street in London, that you're going in certain shops. They can then communicate directly, not with a human being who's going to read that, but another robot back in Brighton that notices that you haven't had a coffee. Other databases know that you do like coffee, and before you know it, what pops up on your phone is a special offer to go in the coffee place just outside the station where they're going to offer you a free cake with your coffee. And so robots are starting to communicate with each other for good and bad reasons, but these things are going to become the next wave in marketing, and it is surveillance. But, you know, it's also marketing, because marketing is surveillance.
That's certainly something worth quoting. Marketing is surveillance. So we talked about millennials, people born, is it after 85, 84? So how do you think marketing is, because we've painted quite a bleak picture, haven't we, between us this morning. How do you think marketing is going to need to change going forward?
I talk a lot about just two really simple words that, luckily, they're so simple, I don't think they're buzzwords that much, which is push and pull. Or sometimes, where it's slightly more buzzy, is propulsion and attraction. But a lot of the new businesses that millennials are setting up are not operating according to propulsion models. And what propulsion is push marketing. It's about advertising. It's about reach. The language of marketing is very kind of about targets, about reach, about territories, you know, and all of that. And that's a very predatory model. It also talks about persuasion. It talks about creating desire. There's manipulation and so on. The alternative for a millennial group of people who are much, much more immersed in social media than even my generation is, and I think I got quite into it when computers came along, but they are the digital natives, is that they don't have a problem being 24/7 connected. In fact, they're becoming quite skilled at knowing when to switch it on and off in a lot of cases. They their work-life balance, according to a lot of research, is very, very important to them. And so they like the idea of discovering stuff and finding stuff themselves. And so how do you find stuff? Well, one way is that you push it in front of people's noses, but the other is you just focus on the purpose of your business, be passionate about it and doing it really well. And then social media will share those stories, and storytelling becomes a big part of this. It's not what you share, but it's what other people share that you have shared, that's important, that people become advocates for you out of genuine enthusiasm for what you do. So the best cafes in Brighton, for example, and actually the best web designers and the best plumbers do not need to advertise, because they're already full up in a way, and they're growing because people are saying, I use that guy and he was really good, or she runs the best web design company in Brighton, you know, and you need to go to her. And so you need to be out there, you need to be providing passionate, good stories, but you move away from a model of push, push, push and reaching to, I know these sound slightly buzzy as well, but, you know, emanating, you know, radiating what you do well through reputation and through the resharing of what you do. So social media then becomes more about other people advocating you rather than you feeling you need to, excuse the language, vomit your content in the form of marketing all over people.
I love the idea of people like you and me, Paul, slightly older generation, being able to manage the fire hose. Because I always think of it as a fire hose, the internet and social media and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I like what you say. It's very much kind of like when podcasting became quite popular and people were saying, oh, you don't have to be all salesy as long as you're... And I know it was an overused word, but they used the word passionate, which I actually hate these days. But if it really floats your boat, if you're doing something that you believe in, or your business is around something that you believe in, and you emanate passion, let's use that word passion, then it's a much more human way of or sort of, as you say, a radiating way of getting it out, isn't it?
Yeah, but you've also, I mean, you've got a bit of a problem here, a paradox. Like, if you take let's get specific, the example of Facebook. Most people here, if they've been on Facebook, will have posted something, particularly on a Facebook page if they run any sort of project or organization. And before you're allowed to leave, Facebook puts a little message in your face and says, why don't you boost this post? You could reach another 800 people. And then it's all again, how am I going to reach those people with this post? How can I push it out there further? Now, I've had lots of evidence that that works. It actually works if you're putting on a theatre show in Brighton and you post something about your show and you only reach 32 people. Mm. Well, for another £4, it tells you can reach another 800 people. And for another £8, you can reach another 2,000 people. You can be heard by them. So that can work. But you also need to ask yourself what game you're getting into if you have to do that every time, what that is actually going to cost you and how sustainable that is. There's a lot more evidence on the street in Brighton that on the 4 days of the Brighton Fringe, if you get out onto the streets chatting to people and you actually start not with come and see my amazing show, but are you interested in this sort of theatre? And you ask a question, which is more about attraction. Not everybody, but a lot of people get curious. They come over because they like being asked questions. And then you can tell them about your show. And it's a conversation in the real sense of it, two parties being involved in that. And so you can use the traditional models, but don't let them be your default. Use them as part of a repertoire alongside real conversation and real listening and real responsiveness and getting out there in what it's actually is another term, but I like it. Humble inquiry is where actually what you do, if it's a genuine response to what people really need, then you don't need to push it because you've already met a need that came out of a conversation with the human race.
It's interesting, actually, Paul, because it sounds like the thing you just described with Facebook, it sounds like Facebook are giving you kind of, like you're a normal person, you're sort of radiating stuff in a normal way at the moment, but for an extra £8, you can step onto this platform where you can become one of the spammers. Yeah. Is that the way you see it?
Well, in the end, isn't that happening now, that we end up, and I'm guilty of it and everybody, that, you know, you're telling everybody to come to your event or your party, and actually you're being no better than a spammer when you start spraying all your Facebook friends with stuff. And it's something I'm reflecting on now, because we all get drawn into it all of the time, and it can become a bit of a compulsion. And actually, it's not really a plug for the book, but the title of my book, Digital Inferno, was about the idea that I think we're all in digital hell at the moment, and we're losing hours and hours of time in distraction. And actually, at places like the Edinburgh Fringe that I go to, where there's over 3,000 shows, social media turns into almost a white elephant, because everyone's saying amazing, the noise is too loud, and unless you've got large budgets and you can really reach people with lots of money, you might as well get off social media and just get out onto the streets talking to people.
So just to round this up, Paul, because I could talk all day about this, to be honest, let's just go back to sort of the rise of new tech and sort of new things coming up on the horizon. How is marketing and advertising changing, do you think, with the rise of new tech? Where do you see it going?
Well, so I was recently at an event in London called Robots at Work, and it was, I mean, I don't use this term often, mind-blowing, but I did see sort of mouths open in shock. We had some people there. One was a futurist talking about where this is going in the future. He mentioned, you know, the Internet of Robots. So, you know, expect a world of marketing where, well, a number of things happen. There's going to be the realm of 3D printing as well. So that's going to change things in a huge way. Products can actually be printed in your home. So marketing will shift there. And there's going to be a lot more marketing of designs than, you know, physical products on shelves if 3D printing really takes off in different areas. In terms of what we glibly called surveillance, I mean, expect a world, if these technologies are not governed in any particular way, where that you probably won't be able to be in any space, and these might be premium spaces you pay for, where you're not, where your behavior isn't being collected and used for the purposes of marketing, for the purposes of information. That's not the 1984 nightmare only. It's just functional for where marketing thinks it's heading. So they're not doing it to control your behavior in terms of your democratic rights. They just want to push you products and get you, you know, benevolently entangled in their relationship so that you just buy their products all the time. That's already happening. As soon as you pick up your phone, you know, unless you get very smart, it is possible at the moment, even without breaking into your phone, to switch off quite a lot of the following of you. But I've done that really well, and I still get targeted with adverts, you know, on the internet. Yeah. So surveillance is going to happen. But then what happens is, as we start to plug into the world of tech, VR really got launched for the first time properly this year with some of the headsets. Yeah. But when they start to get embedded in, Google Glass was a failure, those augmented reality spectacles, but new products are going to come along. There will be implants for our eyes. There are going to be sensory implants, even implants for our brains at some point. And then advertising gets whispered directly into your thoughts. That might sound exciting for some people and horrific for others, but this is all on the horizon, and it's not that far away.
Well, Paul, certainly food for thought there. Thanks so much for coming on. How can our listeners find out more about you and your book?
Well, I just look up Digital Inferno. That's the name of the book, which is the website is digitalinfernobook.com. And I also have another website, cats3000.com, which is where most of my writings are. They're available freely. It does sound like I've got a dark take on the world. There's a lot of positivity in there, but it is mostly dark.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you for listening, listeners. Show notes are in the usual place, sitevisibility.com/impodcast. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Please feel free to leave a review, because we like reviews. Hopefully that'll be a good one, because it helps us to grow the audience. If you want to connect with me personally, I'm Dr. Pod, DocTorPod on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you've got, if you want to sort of feedback to us or ask us questions, and we'll do a questions and answers, two ways of doing that. Email is podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk. And there's a magic telephone line where you can leave a voice message, +44 1273 256 150. Well, that's all from me, Andy. And it's all from Paul.
Thanks a lot. And the sun is still shining.
And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.